Welcome to Multifamily Real Estate Investing, presented by Mara Poling. My name is Pat Poling. I'm the founder and CEO of Mara Poling, and I'm happy to be with you this week to discuss a cautionary tale. Beware the three cap in five cap clothing. Now, what I mean by that is, well, when is a five cap purchasing an asset, and the math says it's a five cap? When is that really not a five cap? Well, it's when it's a three cap hiding inside there. And I'm going to show you today how to look out for that so that you don't, either in your own portfolio or investing with a sponsor, invest in a deal thinking it's a five cap when in fact it's really a three cap. And so with that, we'll get going. As always, if you have any questions, you can shoot me an email, pat@marapoling.com. Those of you that attended and those of you that have been looking for the updated webinar posting for our recent session on the DuPont chart and multifamily financials, we have been working on that content, and unfortunately the file we have is so corrupted that what we're going to need to do is we're going to need to record that offline, a new version, and we will get that posted. So thank you for your patience. We will get that posted. Hopefully, we'll get to it sometime this week. As I said, we've got lots of great acquisition activity going on, but we will make that a priority and get to it. So, five cap, three cap, what am I talking about? If you've listened to any of our content for any length of time, you'll know that we don't rely on cap rates for much of anything. They're a bit of a market contrivance, this notion that I can look at, well, a property has $500,000 in net operating income, and I think I'll pay $10 million for it, so it's a five cap. Five cap being the capitalization rate, it's the unlevered rate of return on an investment. So if I spend $10 million to buy something, it's going to generate $500,000 in net operating income. That's a five cap. If it was a three cap, then I'd only be buying $300,000 of net operating income with my $10 million, as an example. So, as I said, we don't put a lot of emphasis on cap rates because we believe underwriting ultimately is what tells you whether a deal is a good deal and whether an exit is a smart exit or not. And you don't sell at a cap rate. You don't buy at a cap rate. Those are competitive environments. It's a function of how many buyers there are and how many other deals there are out there that they might be able to buy that are of similar quality and performance. But a five cap and a three cap are terms you'll hear, and the notion behind them, the idea that we're buying a certain amount of NOI, does make a lot of sense, and that is something we talk about. So what's it like when we think we're buying a property that's a five cap, where we're paying that return versus it's really a three cap? And how would that happen? So let me walk through three of the places it could occur. Now, it could happen anywhere, right? So we go to acquire an asset, we get a set of financials called a T12, a trailing 12. Now, eventually, we're actually going to want like 2 or 3 years of financials generally. And for much of it, we're really going to focus just on the last 3 months. The lender in particular will look at all of it, but they're going to look at the last 3 months. And so we want to look at those last 3 months. But we do look at the entire 12 months. That's kind of the basic starting point. A set of financials, a T12, and a rent roll. It's kind of the beginning of every analysis when we look at the acquisition of an asset. Now, there's lots of places in an asset, in an acquisition, where the financials could be off a little bit, manipulated. And I don't mean manipulated in a nefarious way. I don't mean somebody cooking their books. I mean management decisions of how you operate a property will show up in the financials and will affect financials in different ways. So let's take an example. Let's say that we've got a property that has $1 million a year of revenue. Now, that's all the total revenue. That's the gross revenue that you can get, less all the vacancy stuff that goes on and bad debt, and then adding in all the other income, and there's $1 million that comes in. And $500,000 goes out the door, right? It pays the salaries and property taxes and insurance and all sorts of other things that go on, and there's $500,000 less. And this seller wants $10 million for their property. Well, $10 million, we're buying $500,000 in NOI. That's a 5 cap. On the surface, especially in today's environment, that sounds like a pretty good deal. That oftentimes can be one of the first indicators is, all right, so what's the catch? Generally speaking, people aren't selling things for less than what they're worth, or not significantly less. There certainly are folks out there that might sell below a market number for a variety of reasons, but this is a pretty big shift. A 5 cap, especially if you're in, for example, more of an urban area where the market probably is 4s or even high 3s. So what's the story, right? So we get the T12 and we go through and we look, and it might be that T12 looks really good on the revenue side, but if you actually look at the T3, they've had an increase in vacancy and they've had a increase in write-offs and they're using more concessions. And so while for the year they're at this $1 million revenue number, if you annualized the last 3 months, maybe it's only $950,000, right? So that could be a place. Not going to go into any more detail than that, but that's possibly one place it could happen, right? Where I always look, we look at all the items, obviously, but where I really focus a lot is, tell me what's going on with these three items. So we will look at repairs and maintenance and turnover expense. Now, we separate those out. Some folks combine them together in their financials. Essentially, these are the dollars, the expense dollars that are spent fixing stuff, either fixing stuff while somebody's in the unit, which is repairs and maintenance, or fixing stuff after somebody has moved out before the next person moved in, turnover. So I have a pretty good idea of what that number ought to be, especially given the vintage of an asset, right? So if this is an 80s vintage Class B asset, we're extraordinarily familiar with those, pretty good idea of what they ought to be spending doing that. It is not uncommon to see those numbers be either extremely high, meaning they're expensing lots and lots of stuff, right? Maybe they're spending $800, $900, $1,000 a door on repairs and maintenance and turnover, which, by the way, if they were doing that, would actually lower their NOI and would actually make this an even better deal. Or, and this is probably the more common, it's artificially low, right? It'll be $150 a door in total. Well, there's only two ways you get to that number. One is you actually don't do any maintenance work. You do it only when forced to. And you can tell that when you go and look at a property, if that's the case or not. The other way you get to that is by how you categorize those dollars. If you aggressively capitalize those. Now, that may or may not be the appropriate tactic to use for tax purposes. And obviously, when I'm looking at someone's financials, I'm not passing judgment on whether or not they've been, you know, filling out their tax return correctly. But if they're capitalizing heavily, then that repairs and maintenance number is going to be lower. For example, when they do turnovers, they're not doing turns, they're doing full upgrades. They're going in and simply upgrading everything. Well, that's appropriate that you'd capitalize that. It's also possible when there's a repair that needs to be done, instead of fixing things, they're replacing things. So someone's refrigerator is having a problem. Instead of fixing it, well, you just put a new refrigerator in. Someone's toilet isn't working, well, we put a new toilet in. Or the parts we put in, well, they're new parts, right? You can get very extreme about it. And what you're doing is you're going to drive that repair and maintenance number down. If there's less expense, that means you've got more NOI. So let's just say that there's $40,000 in the example I'm using of actual expense that would have normally been expensed that's been capitalized. So our NOI that was $500,000, let me do a little math here, $500,000 is now $460,000. We're still paying $10 million for it. This is now a 4.6 cap. Okay, next, management fees. I'm always interested in seeing management fees because people manage properties lots of different ways and use lots of different firms to do it. Helps me get an understanding of where the market really is so that when we're negotiating with our management firm partners, we have a pretty good handle on, you know, is it 2.5%? Is it 5%? What's the actual number that makes the most sense that we see in the marketplace? Generally, 3.5% for the kind of assets that we work on and the sizes. This is maybe a little smaller asset, so it might be closer to 3.5. Excuse me. But looking at this asset, looking at the T12, what we see is a number that's significantly smaller. It's like, well, why would it be smaller? Well, they might be self-managing. And when you self-manage, you may or may not pay yourself a management fee, or you may pay a very small fee, or maybe when you quote-unquote self-manage, in addition to the salaries, you pay a fee to the person that kind of runs the whole show separately. So this line item in a self-managed environment can be an odd one. Well, that needs to be normalized, right? Because I'm not going to self-manage it, and anybody else that buys it isn't going to self-manage it. So the way to normalize that is to use 3% or 3.5% or something, and we make an adjustment to the NOI to reflect that. And so let's say that that's $10,000. So now our $460,000 in NOI has now dropped down to $450,000 because we're looking at that set of T12 financials, and we're saying the repairs and maintenance number is low. It really should be this if things were capitalized in a manner that we might have capitalized them. And the management fee is a little low, and this is more representative of the normal management fee you'd see in the industry. Then we get to the granddaddy of them all, property taxes. Now, those others that I mentioned, those are all decisions the owner has made in terms of how they're going to manage the property. Property taxes, that's not the case, right? There's nothing you do as an owner that artificially moves your taxes around. You can petition the tax authority to change the assessment. We do that on, unfortunately, a fairly regular basis. If we're assessed a number that we think is inconsistent with the marketplace. And often you can prevail. That's certainly been our experience. But it doesn't move in the other direction. You're not going to see someone with artificially low taxes because someone has done something. That's not the way that that works. You do see properties that have artificially low taxes. And what I mean by artificial isn't that, again, that they've done something or that they're actually paying a higher number but only reporting a certain amount. No, it's just their property may not have been reassessed for some period of time. We sold an asset once that was in that situation. We purchased it from someone. It had an older assessment on it. The entire time that we owned it, it was not reassessed. And when we went to sell it, that was a significant factor in the potential buyer's analysis of the property was, well, this thing's going to reassess at some point in time. It's way below market. When it goes to what it should be, what's that number going to be? And it really is a bit of a guessing game because you don't know, one, when that's going to happen. Two, you don't know how much that assessment's going to be, how large it will be. Now, in the example I'm going to walk through here, and these are numbers based on, you know, reality, real numbers that we've seen out there, you know, we've got a property that, again, our example, this is $500,000 in traditional NOI, the way that they're describing it. So about a $10 million purchase price is what they want. but it might be assessed for only $1 million. And the reason for that could be that the property's been owned a long time, although it could have changed hands. And obviously, it's appreciated in value. So it might have been, at one point in time, a $3 million property, and it was assessed at $1 million, which is probably still a little low, but it's grown over time, and now it's a $10 million property, purportedly, and it's got this very low assessment. So if I pay $10 million, am I going to get assessed at $6 million, at $7 million, at $8 million? What's that number? There's some number in there that's going to have an impact on all of this. There could be $50,000, $100,000, $150,000 of swing in there. So if I adjust that NOI and say, well, yeah, you've made a lot of money, but you've made a lot of money because you've had a very favorable tax situation, which is unreasonable to believe it will continue. So we're going to take that $450,000 in NOI, and we're going to make another adjustment to it in the tune of $100,000 or $150,000 because we need to reflect what the actual tax environment is. And this isn't because of the sale, right? If the property really is worth this kind of number, they could get assessed that this next year, right? The assessor could say, based on what's going on in the marketplace around you, it's time to reassess you, and you should be $6 million or $7 million or $8 million in assessment, and you should have this kind of tax bill. So it's not just triggered by the sale. It's triggered by the fact that in this market, everybody else is getting assessed at a higher level and this property isn't. So it's really normalizing it from that standpoint. Well, that drops our NOI to $350,000, maybe even all the way down to $300,000. Well, a $10 million purchase price on a $350,000 NOI is a 3.5 cap. On $300,000, it's a 3 cap. And there you have it, a deal that was floated out to the marketplace as a 5 cap is actually a 3 cap that's hiding inside the 5 cap. And if you don't do the analysis that I just walked through, you run the risk of purchasing an asset thinking that you're getting a bargain when in fact, depending upon the market you're in, you're overpaying for it. Now, here's the safety net for this. We absolutely do the math that we just walked through. And we do it in part because it helps us with the very early stage analysis of, okay, what's this thing really generating in the way of return? I could throw all that out, though, and say, okay, ignore all of it. I'm not even going to look at any of it. When I run this through an underwrite, it's all going to get caught. And the reason it's going to get caught is this, is we don't utilize expenses when we're doing trailing 12 expenses when we're putting an underwrite together. None of those items transfer with the exception of utilities. Everything else, we put our own fresh number in. We look at what the trailing 12 is because it will help educate us more about that asset. For example, if it had high repairs and maintenance, well, why is that? Are there ongoing maintenance issues that we should be budgeting more for? But we're not going to look at the management firm and say, well, they paid the management firm this, that's what we're going to pay. Well, no, we're going to have a different management firm. We'll have our own number in there. And so on down the line. For taxes, we're going to make our own assessment as to what we think the property is going to look like after the purchase in terms of what the assessment will be from the tax authority. And if it's a big jump, as in the example I'm using here, then that's probably going to make the deal not work. And you get to this place of, well, there's risk involved. Yes, but I am now taking the risk, and the reward, if you will, is going to the seller because I'm overpaying for the asset. So if this was truly the case, and it was really a $300,000 NOI, then a 5 cap, if it was a 5 cap, would make it a $6 million property, right? If it was a 4 cap, it'd be a $7.5 million property. It's to get to $10 million, it's a 3 cap. right? And that's just at least in our modeling, probably not gonna work. Now, as I said, there's a few of these items that could move in the opposite direction, right? You could go through and see, wow, they've been paying 4% for management. I can get management less expensively. They've been putting a lot of money into repairs and maintenance, which is actually writing off and expensing items that traditionally should be capitalized. So maybe there's some movement there. So it's conceivable that you could have a T12 that says $500,000 in NOI, and after the adjustments, it would actually adjust to 5.25 or 550 or even 600,000, which would improve the economics of the transaction. But you've got to go through and do the analysis. That's the ultimate point of all of this is, and one of the failings again of cap rates is simply grabbing the NOI and doing some quick math and saying, well, it's worth this much or at that price that they want, it's this kind of a cap rate. That's an interesting conversation to have, but you've got to go into that detail to be able to see all of this. Obviously, very valuable when you're in the acquisition mode. Also, extremely valuable when you're talking about an exit. When you're thinking about how am I going to position my asset to exit, right? If we've got an asset in our portfolio and we're looking at putting it on the market, we go through and do the very same analysis. We look at the T12, we look at the T3, and we see what the story is they tell. And if there's something in there that needs some explanation so that a buyer can make a more informed decision, we want to make sure we provide that. And when we're setting our own expectations for what we might get in the marketplace, if we owned this asset and we looked at it and said, yeah, the paperwork says 500,000, but it's really more 300 and some odd thousand is probably the real kind of number. Maybe it's 350, maybe it's 300, then we would probably be having a conversation around, so we should expect to get 7 million, 7.5, maybe 8 million, you know, some number like that. And we expect that's the conversation our broker would have with us as well. We wouldn't put expectations together for a 10 million. And based on those expectations, we might then say, yeah, it's not the right time to sell. You know, there's more growth to be had, and we just aren't going to make the return that we want if we exit now. We'll continue to hold throughout the entirety of our hold period, or at least continue to hold. So valuable to do clearly when you're in an acquisition, valuable as well when you're considering an exit or some other action, even a recapitalization, a refinance down the road. But clearly something that shows you've got to look at more than just the surface financials. So I hope this all made sense. If it didn't, and my guess is there's at least one part maybe that didn't strike right, shoot me an email. Be happy to answer your questions, pat@marapoling.com, marapoling.com. Please do swing by the website, the Learning Center at marapoling.com. That is where you will find, as soon as we get this re-recorded, the content from the financial webinar we did a few weeks back. Again, my apologies. We've been playing around with that file and just can't get it fixed. But we will get a new version recorded and up, and hopefully I'll be able to make that announcement next week that we've got that done. If you have any questions, shoot me an email. Otherwise, please join me next week for another episode of Multifamily Real Estate Investing, presented by Mara Poland.